Hi, everyone. This is Deb. Welcome to the Starving for God VBA workshop, where we are committed to getting more freedom with our food and our body issues and our issues with life than we ever thought possible. Okay. So let's just find out who we have on the call today. Again, I am Deb, and I'm from San Diego, and I'm a compulsive eater and restrictor and chaos creator and lots of things, Al-Anon and drug addict and all that good stuff. Who else do we have on the line today?
Shannon, compulsive overeater, bulimic from San Diego.
Hi, Shannon.
Adela, overeater from San Diego.
Great. Hi, Adela.
Hi, Katie, food addict, alcoholic from Boston.
Hi, Katie.
Hi, it's Lynn, compulsive overeater and drug addict from Sherman Oaks, California.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi, this is Kimberly from Tahunga, California, compulsive eater and drug addict.
Hi, Kimberly.
It's Jan from Burbank, California, compulsive overeater in recovery. Hi. Al-Anon, part-time chaos creator.
Part-time.
Hi, this is Cammie from Visalia, food addict, alcoholic.
Hey, Cammie.
Hey. Hi, this is Lauren, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Lauren.
Hi, it's Suzanne in Northern California in San Mateo. And I'm I'm a compulsive overeater, a chaos creator, and alcoholic and other things too. Thanks.
Okay. Anyone else want to announce themselves? Okay.
It's Kadia from Los Angeles.
Hello, Kadia. Okay, great. So before we get started into our set-aside prayer for the second step, I just want to share that really exciting news. We actually have a new Big Book Awakening website. It's called bbaworks.com, so bbaworks.com. And I believe that the bbastuff.com website will be forwarding there if it's not already. So that's going to be the new place to go to get everything that you need and to also be able to access the link to this workshop. So all that is happening, and that'll be a really, really great place and a resource. So, all right, let's make sure everyone is muted by pressing *6. And then we're going to get into the set-aside prayer here and then a few minutes of meditation before we get into our discussion for today. So that set-aside prayer that you transcribed into the front of your book, we're now at the step 2, my coming to believe. So let's say that prayer together. God, please enable me to set aside everything I think I know for an open mind and a new experience. Help me see the truth about my need to come to believe in a power greater than myself. Okay. So, before we move into really, really diving into We Agnostics and the second step and what it has to teach us and ask us and offer us, I want to just review the first step because it tells me again that, you know, it starts We Agnostics with a review of the first step. And have I seen that I'm the real one? And have I seen these things that I can't quit entirely even if I want to? And so I look at how I'm powerless in the first step in four areas, really, in body, in mind, in my emotions, and in my spirit. And in my body, I have this physical reaction, this allergy to food or this allergy to skipping a meal. And once I start, something happens in my body and I lose control over how much once I start. And maybe it's just a serving this time, or maybe it's one meal, but maybe it's the whole box, or maybe it's the whole week, or maybe it's overeating and overexercising, or binging and purging, or adding drugs, or, you know, like chaos creating in other ways, or all of them together. And I don't know how much I'm going to need to get to that place of ease and comfort once I start. So that's this physical piece. And then the mental piece, the insanity of the mind, that I can't connect A, like my actions, with B, my consequences. You know, I can't bring into my mind with sufficient force the pain and humiliation of even just a week or a month ago, and I always justify going back. And I have this great obsession of my mind that I'm gonna regain control, but then it's always followed by less control. And so do I see that insanity of my mind? And then last week we went deeper. So this book has me go deeper within to what's lying underneath the mental and the physical, what's kind of setting off this mental obsession. And I start to get in touch with that sickened part of me that was there before I started acting out with food. And they're talking about spiritual malady, spiritual dis-ease, that part of me that felt unsafe or alone or misunderstood. That part of me that felt disconnected from God and myself and the world around me. Like that black hole of pain and emptiness that I maybe felt all my life, or that I maybe felt at points in my life, and that it's so big and overwhelming that I filled it. I needed to fill it. And so I filled it with whatever I could, and so I would stuff myself with food, or I would stuff myself with attention, or with drama, or with clutter, or with body obsession, busyness, or I would numb out with drugs or alcohol or restricting or purging so that I could just disconnect from that pain and that feeling of emptiness. And I have to see that on my own power, that that's the best that I can do. And that without any more power, I'm doomed. And that's what it tells me as we get into the chapter of We Agnostics. I'm doomed. I'm either going to die. This is the spiritual death they're talking about. Doomed to a compulsive overeating, restricting death, or spiritual death, or live on a spiritual basis of life. And I can't see a spiritual malady, right? But I can see it by what's reflected in my life around me. And so last week we kind of likened it to the painter who's trying to paint a lake, but the water is clear. You can't see it. So what does she do? Well, she paints everything that's reflected around the lake. She paints the trees and the mountains and the bank and the sky and the clouds, and everything that's reflected then starts to paint the picture of the lake. And that's what's going on with my spiritual malady, is that what's going on around my life paints the picture of what's happening on the inside. And so I look at my life around me, and I take this inventory on page 52 to gauge how spiritually fit I am on the inside. And this is a great place, whether I'm abstinent, whether I'm not abstinent, whether I have time or I'm a newcomer. This is the place that I want to come to, and I want to take inventory and really get a sense of how I'm doing, how I'm measuring up. And so I ask myself, how am I doing in personal relationships? And it's not like, am I in one or not in one, but how am I doing in them? Am I needing you to be something for me to be okay? Am I validating? You know, am I using you to get validation or to make me feel needed or loved? Am I living my life based on what you're going to think of me? And can I control my emotional nature? Maybe I can, I can feel someone on the inside and I can be nice to you on the outside, even though I'm feeling jealousy or I'm feeling anger. But can I just control my the jealousy or the envy that comes up inside me? Can I control my anger? Can I control my shame? I can't. I mean, in my experience, these emotions just appear. When I'm not connected to God, they rule me. They completely own me. When I am connected to God, I can watch these things come and go like the tide. And they don't pull me in. They don't take me in the undertow. And I pray to misery and depression. So maybe this is clinical depression for you. Maybe it's not clinical depression for you. But do I just have that, like I can just be a basket case. I can wake up sometimes and just be a basket case. Or just feeling down. Or just, you know, waking up in the morning and being grumpy and irritable. I mean, this is like my family would walk on eggshells around me. Because when I would wake up in the morning, they didn't know who I was going to be and I didn't know who I was going to be. Like, and I didn't want to be that way. But I could not control it. So is that you? Has that ever been you? Or can that be you? Can I make a living? You know, when we talked about last time, can I make a life worth living? Do I have a sense of purpose and meaning and direction each day? Do I have a feeling of uselessness? You know, do I feel incompetent or inadequate? And I like to ask it as, where do I feel incompetent and inadequate? Because those are places that really, like a laser beam, point me to where I need more God, where I'm being agnostic or atheist. Am I full of fear? You know, does fear rule my life and make my decisions? Do I operate from a place of feeling unsafe? When I'm working with people listening to their fifth steps, like, The two main things that I hear over and over again are fear of being unsafe and fear of being lonely or being alone, being left alone. I hear that over. I mean, I hear a lot of things, but this unsafety just comes up so much. There's the fear that the other shoe is going to drop or, you know, like things are out of control. The fear of being fat. The fear of people finding out I'm a fraud, you know, fear of failing, the fear of intimacy, and it goes on and on. And am I living my life ruled by these fears? And that's what's going on my altar, and that's what I'm praying to. Are you unhappy? You know, we get this restless, irritable, and discontent. So am I uneasy? Am I easily annoyed? And am I never satisfied? And do I seem to be unable to be of real help to others? Do I think I have nothing to give someone else because I'm such a mess? Or another way of asking that is, where do I think that I have nothing to give someone else because I'm such a mess? Or am I full of advice? What I think that I know is best for others, but it's coming from a place of ego and pride, or, you know, I have an agenda or a motive, or even though my intention is good, like I think I know what's best for others, because that's not a real help either. And so I go through this inventory, and this is a great inventory to take in daily meditation or in like a weekly review. And if I can relate to these things, then it's saying that I'm suffering from a spiritual malady and that only a spiritual solution is going to be able to treat that. You know, and I have to ask myself, like, can I just me on my own power, like just me right now sitting in my chair, can I fix all these problems in my life? Can I fix how I'm being, how I'm showing up in personal relationships? You know, and that, and I understand that they're like, yes, I can decide to break up with that person, or I can decide to, you know, like I can kind of make some of those choices, you know, but like, can I actually sit here and change how I'm interacting with the world around me? Can I control my emotional nature? You know, and like, again, I can probably behavior modify and I can control how you receive some of my emotions, but like the stuff that just burns up inside me, when I just get anger, just comes, jealousy just comes upon me. I mean, it just happens. Shame comes upon me. I have no control over that stuff. Can I fix my feeling of uselessness, you know, my prey to misery and depression? That stuff just falls on me. And I can't fix my fears. I can kind of try to do some kind of like mental gymnastics to like, oh no, it's not gonna, you know, kind of give myself like a little, but the deep seated fears that are deep inside of me, I can't extract those. I can't cast those out. That's what I need this work for. That's what I need God for. And so I have to see that lack of power is my dilemma. And, you know, we talked about last time that dilemma is two equally unfavorable alternatives. And so can I see that there's actually, I have these two unequally favorable alternatives. And those of us who are like, hey, I got God, that doesn't apply to me. Yeah, but there's areas in our lives, each one of our lives, where we still have some growth. At least that's my truth. And so can I see that the unfavorable alternative regarding my spiritual life is that I'm going to have to give up my will in a certain area that I'm clinging to right now. Maybe that's an area that's around my food, or maybe it's an area that's around a belief that I have about myself, or about the world around me, or about others, or about a relationship with somebody. And I don't want to give that up because that's what I know. And that makes me feel comfortable, or it makes me feel justified, or it allows me to live my life a certain way. And some of us are at the other end of the continuum where it's like, I don't even trust this God thing. God's never worked in my life. And I bristle with antagonism when you start to talk about spiritual matters. And so I absolutely see that that's an unfavorable alternative. So whichever place that you're hitting, can you see that that is actually in this conversation unfavorable? And then the other, being spiritually bankrupt, being in pain and misery and not a life worth living, like that's not an alternative that I want either. And so I have to see that I have this dilemma. And so it tells me on page 45, I have to find a power by which I can live. And it has to be a power greater than myself. Well, obviously, but where and how am I going to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. So it doesn't say that what this book is about is that it's going to make me powerful so that I can solve all my problems. Because, see, I can do that. I can take this program. I can get some understanding of it. I can get a little bit of relief, and then I can start to manage and run my life and try to solve my problems, you know, self-willing spiritual growth. And I run into myself doing that all the time because, like a lot of you out there, I know a lot. We know a lot, and sometimes it works against us. And so that's not what it's saying here. It's just saying that it's going to enable me to find a power greater than myself, which is going to solve my problem. So what is my problem? Well, the way I see this is my problem is that I don't have any power. And that my life is unmanageable. And my life is unmanageable when I'm not abstinent or when I'm not sane or however you want to define that, when I'm not free. And then when I am abstinent, it's like I don't all of a sudden get the power to manage my life. I just get, in my opinion, I just get aligned with the power that does manage my life. And then I get to just turn to that power each day in prayer and meditation and say, okay, what's my role? Direct me, show me, guide me, point me. You know, later on in this chapter, we're going to be told that we can be a spearhead of God's ever-advancing creation. Point me in the direction that you will have me be. So it says that means we've written the book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral. And it means, of course, that we're going to talk about God. Here, difficulty arises with agnostics. Many times we talk to a new person and watch her hopes rise as we discuss the overeating and restricting problems and explain our fellowship, but her face falls when we speak of spiritual matters, especially when we mention God, for we have reopened a subject which this person has thought they have neatly evaded or entirely ignored. So I love that this chapter is called We Agnostics and Not We Believers. It's speaking to all of us, whether or not we identify as being a believer of God or a non-believer of God. This chapter is talking to me, and every time I go through the steps every year, I find deeper and deeper levels of where I'm agnostic and deeper levels of where I need more God. And I become more and more willing to have God take me further in every area of my life than I've ever thought possible. So I believe that this chapter is always talking to me. And there, just on this call, we probably have a lot of diversity. We probably have some people who come to program with a great understanding of God and religion, and they're very well-versed in their sacred texts, and, you know, they're big believers. And then we have people who didn't really grow up believing or who don't have religion or who just don't connect with this whole God thing. And all of that is welcome. All of that is welcome here. This talks about honest doubt in the next paragraph. We've shared his honest doubt and prejudice. And I always take a moment here when I'm working with people, and I want to take a moment as well to ask, well, what is your honest doubt and prejudice? You know, do you still have like that honest doubt of, will this really work for me? You know, this didn't work the last time I did my steps. Why would it work this time? Or I've done everything possible. How could this possibly work? Or, you know, fill in the blank. Like, do I have that honest doubt? Or do I have prejudice? And prejudice for me is everything that I think that I know about God, about my program, about spirituality, about what I need. It's everything that's blocking me. And that's why we do the set-aside prayer. And so it says, some of us have been violently anti-religious. To others, the word God brought a particular idea of which someone tried to impress upon me during a childhood. Perhaps we rejected it because this conception seemed inadequate. And that was me. I actually grew up Jewish, and let me first just say that I love Judaism, and I also want to share honestly about what my experience was with Judaism when I was growing up, and it was by no fault of my parents, actually. It was just what I experienced. Because the way I saw the God in my religion was, it was a judgmental God, and it was a God who played favorites, and it was a God that punished, and that was And it was definitely a distinct God. Like, I didn't get I didn't have a direct connection with God. And I, growing up, I just very much went through the motions of my religion. But I didn't ever really feel spiritually connected. And I would go to temple, and, you know, when I was younger, I would be in a situation where the men and women sat separately, and I, like, that affected me. I didn't like feeling that. I had a whole interpretation about what that meant. And later on, I would go and I would recite prayers, but I didn't understand them. And I would pretend to meditate. I would watch people and I would try to emulate, and I would pretend to meditate during the time of silent meditation. But the whole time I was just thinking about how other people were perceiving me. I didn't have the connection. And I went to a religious summer camp, and I loved that experience, and I got really, really involved in the culture and the traditions, but I never really developed that God thing. I don't remember ever even, like, praying to God. You know, some people say that they have, like, a Santa Claus God, and they prayed for stuff. Like, I don't even remember praying. Like, it was this concept that I wasn't connected to. I guess I relate more to Bill's story in that way. And I do remember, you know, having a huge chip on my shoulder and being resentful at others who said that they were going to pray for me. You know, people from other religions who said that they would pray for me, and people who told me that I was going to be going to hell because I didn't believe what they believed. And then I was resentful at, like, holiday, like the holiday season, like what we're in right now. Like, I was super resentful at Christmas, you know, just because I was so resentful that, you know, my impression was that everybody assumed that everybody celebrates Christmas, and I felt like such an outsider in that. And so I had lots and lots of layers. I mean, you can just hear all of the prejudice and all of the, like, the gunk and the junk, you know. And so I was in a position where I felt like an odd duck. Like, I didn't really feel like I connected to my, like, the God of my religion, but I also just didn't connect and was very critical and judgmental of other religions that I felt like were being critical and judgmental of me. And so I just abandoned the God idea entirely. And I started thinking more like, you know, I remember during that time, we were learning about Marx, and we were learning this idea, like Marx said, that religion is the opiate of the people, and it's the, you know, the way of the weak. And I was like, yeah, that's what religion is. I completely bought into that, and I started learning about existentialism and free will in school and reading poetry and literature and everything that just backed up my beliefs. And so, you know, that's where I was living for most of my years. I just didn't really, really have a connection. And I definitely, you know, on the top of page 46, where it talks about, I looked upon the world of warring individuals, warring theological systems, and inexplicable calamity with deep skepticism. I looked askance at many individuals who claimed to be godly, incredibly judgmental of certain people of the cloth who I would hear about scandals and various things, and it only just fueled my fire around organized religion and my judgment around all of that. But I also was completely taken, just like it says, enchanted by a starlit night and the feeling of awe and wonder. I had that going on as well. So this book is really, really talking to me. And it's just going to, this chapter is going to ask me over and over and over again to lay aside prejudice. Just lay it aside. I'm here on page 46 in the middle paragraph. It says, we found that as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commenced to get results. Even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power, which is God. And so it's now talking about results. I'm actually going to get results here. And this is something I actually want to take a moment and talk about a little bit. Like, how did I actually come to believe in any of the things that I've relied upon? How did I come to believe in compulsive eating or restricting? You know, it's like it was interesting because I was listening to Tyler talk about this, and she's like, okay, so imagine this. So if someone else said that there's this thing that you can take, this thing that you can do that's going to ease your pain, and it's going to fill your loneliness, and it's going to help you cope with your life, and it's going to make you feel safe and make you feel good, and it's going to solve all your problems. But then it's going to turn on you, and it's going to steal your peace of mind and your dignity, and it's going to rob you of your happiness, and it's going to distance you from everything that you care about. Like, what would you do? Like, might you still try it? Because that's what I did. I mean, that's what I did over and over again. That's what I did with food and with drugs and, you know, with all the ways that I used. And so this book is saying you're going to get all of those promises. You're going to get ease and comfort, and you're never going to feel alone again, and you're going to know how to cope with life, and you're going to feel safe, and you're going to have a power that's going to solve all your problems, and much, much more. And, like, are you willing to believe that this might work for you? And so, based on the belief, like, I look at what people are doing, and I'm like, okay, well, it seems to be working for you, so I'm willing to believe that it might work for me. And there's an example. Like, let's say you need your car fixed. And so you go to your friend, you're like, hey, I need my car fixed. They're like, oh, I've got a great, great mechanic. Go to this person, they're going to take care of you, they don't cost that much, they'll hook you up. So you call that person, go to the mechanic, take your car in, and they fix your car, and they're awesome, and they're everything that your friend said they would be, and you're like, wow. And so you got some results. You took some action, right? Someone gave you a suggestion, you took some action, you got some results, and you develop a little bit of faith in this guy, faith in that car mechanic. Maybe he'll be able to help you next time. And that's what all it's asking us to do here with the God thing, is just to try it out. And as we say over and over again in the Big Book Awakening, that faith is the result of results. So, much to our relief, further down on 46, we discovered that we did not need to consider another's conception of God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and effect a contact with him. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe, it's going to give me, so throughout this chapter, again, it's giving me, every time I see capital letters for names, that's another possible conception of God. And so I can use any one of those conceptions and take it to some prayer and meditation and see if that conception works for me, or use that as a basis to ask myself, what my conception of God is. So we have creative intelligence and spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things. We begin to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. We found that God does not make too hard terms with those who seek him. To us, here's another one, the realm of the spirit is broad and roomy and all-inclusive and never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. So that's my job. My job is just to seek. My job isn't to know. My job is just to seek and to be willing. It is open, we believe, to all people. And so on the top of 47, again, it's asking me, do not let any prejudice you may have against spiritual terms deter you from honestly asking yourself what they mean to you. And, I mean, I had a lot of gunk, a lot of beliefs about spiritual terms. I mean, I couldn't hear the word Jesus Christ. Like, that, like, made me bristle with antagonism. And so I, like, as a result of doing this work, I have sat in meditation with each one of these words, with what does God mean? What does spirituality mean? And I do that over and over again. I do that every single time I do this step. I have sat with what does, you know, like trying on all of these different names of God, trying on the name of Jesus Christ, trying on the name of Allah, trying on all these things, because I, today, the way that I operate is that you might say Christ to me, and it, like, and I interpret it as the God of my understanding, and I can meet you in that, and there is no, I've got no baggage, I've got no bristling, I have no judgment. I love that you love what you're talking about, and I love that I love what I'm talking about, and I see that we're talking about the same thing, and it's just, I have absolutely no charge around that stuff. And so I've really, really worked at taking these, taking into consideration what spiritual terms mean to me. And another way of considering what they're saying here is, what qualities do I need my God to have? You know, because I had an experience of thinking that God was punishing and judgmental and distant, I needed my God to be all-forgiving and all-loving and all-knowing and deeply intimate. You know, a God that I could turn to, a God that was all-powerful, could do anything, and could be everywhere and also with me at all times, and was always holding the highest version of me, and at any moment I could just turn to. And so these are just some of the conceptions that come up, and I encourage you, as I encourage myself every time, to sit and to consider, okay, God, I want to reveal more of yourself to me. I want to know more of you, and so I'm going to set aside everything that I already think that I know about you and our relationship, and open myself up for a new experience and reveal yourself to me. It's such a beautiful, beautiful process that we get to do that I don't think many people who don't do this process get to do. A lot of people are working with a God concept that is from their childhood, and gosh, I'd be a very lost person if I was still working with that experience and conception that I had when I was younger. So in the middle of 47, we get the main question that comes up in step two here. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? Now, this is interesting, because this is worded slightly differently from how we read the second step. This is just asking me, am I willing to believe that there is a power greater than myself? Not even asking me, will I believe in a power greater than myself, but just that there is one. Will you actually just concede that? And as soon as you're able to concede that you do believe, or you're willing to believe just that there is a power greater than yourself, we emphatically assure you that you're on your way. It's been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. So when you have a little bit of time in this program, or if you've done the steps before, another way of reading that question is, do I now believe, am I even willing to believe, that there's a power greater than myself that can take me beyond where I am with what? Fill in the blank. Every area of my life, with food, with people, with situations, with body image, with relationships, with career, money, health, family, clutter, chaos. Who else do we have on this call? You know, all the different ways. All the, like, all, everything in my life. The way that I behave, my self-pity. And so we can look at each one of those bedevilments and we can compare, like, okay, what would it look like to go further in this area of my life, in personal relationships, in my emotions, you know, in my feeling of uselessness in the world or usefulness. And then we get this really important word. It says, upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. And we have this transcription at the bottom. So we've already created our structure. We've already created our foundation from page 17, which is the foundation of our program. We have both our the common problem and the common solution. We have the fellowship, and we have the step work. We have our program, and that creates a solid foundation. And now we're adding our very first stone into this foundation. And the cornerstone in a structure, I believe, is the stone that they would put their name on, like the stone that kind of, and then they build from there. So it's a really, really important stone. And it might not seem that important right now, but we're going to be getting to this in the fifth step. And the book is going to keep on referencing this kind of, like, this structure that we're building. We started building it in the first step, and then we add to it in the second step, and then we're going to get the keystone in the third step. And then in the fifth step, it's going to ask us, is your structure firmly in place? You know, are all of these stones properly in place? And so the willingness to believe is very, very important. And it's great news to me to hear that a willingness to believe is enough to get me going here, because we assume that we could not make use of any of spiritual principle, of make use of spiritual principles unless we accepted many things on faith, which seem difficult to believe. And so have you been sitting in there in your program saying, okay, yeah, well, that worked for you, but it's not going to work for me? Because that's what they're asking here, right? I wish I had what you had, but I'm sure it won't work, because I can't believe as you believe. I can't accept the things as surely true as what you're believing that seems so plain to you. So am I doing one of those things? Am I deferring? So I love this on the top of page 48. So, have I often found myself handicapped by stubbornness, sensitivity, and unreasoning prejudice? And of course, I love to say, where am I handicapped by my stubbornness, my sensitiveness, and my unreasoning prejudice? Where am I touchy, so that even a casual reference of spiritual things makes me bristle with antagonism? And I can expand that to of spiritual things, not just in a religious setting per se, but maybe in recovery, maybe in this workshop. Maybe there's been things that have made you bristle with antagonism. And what this is suggesting in this paragraph here is, what would it look like to abandon everything, to cast all those feelings aside, and trust that whatever is God is going to come back to you? So just letting it all go. It's scary, but it's how we move forward. And so we get that word open-minded. Can I just be open-minded in order for God to reveal more of God's will to me? And in this respect, isn't food and restricting and the way I act out around food a great persuader? Because it finally beats me into a state of reasonableness. And before we started the recording today, we were in a conversation that kind of is a little bit like this, where it's like, I relate this to this in my own life, where today I'm in a place with my spiritual connection, and, you know, where I can see that whether I'm like working a perfect program or whether I'm like a little bit off track, I can see that the beauty of the dis-ease that I have is that either way I go, it's going to lead me back to God. I'm either going to get beaten into a state of reasonableness and I'm going to go back to God, or I'm actually living in the realm of the Spirit, and that's just where I am, and I'm connected to God in that way. So I have so much gratitude today for my eating disorder, because it keeps me like I can't let up for 1 minute or 1 day. I just can't. So a little bit further down, I love this because it's now starting to work on me a little bit. Starting to work on their argument of, you know, kind of trying to look in the cracks of all the ways that I am not willing to believe, where my honest doubt and prejudice is showing up, and it's kind of giving me these examples. So I love this example it gives of electricity, of why it's kind of silly to not be willing or silly to not believe. So, and this kind of goes back to what we were saying about faith as the result of results. So I consider electricity. I think in physics class I learned it, you know, a long, long time ago, but I don't specifically know how electricity works. But I rely upon electricity, and I have this trust that it's going to work for me. Like, I walk into a room and I flip that switch, and there isn't a part of me that walks into that room and is like, ooh, I don't know if it's going to work. It's like, I flip the switch and the light goes on. It's not a big deal. And I have full faith and full trust in that. And so I just like how it gives these things, because I get to see all these ways that I do actually. And this it says, why this ready acceptance? Simply because it's impossible to explain what we see, feel, direct, and use without a reasonable assumption as a starting point. And so they're saying that can you make a reasonable assumption as a starting point? Can your starting point be that God can and will influence my life? You know, because I need this program to be practical for me. I can't just like rely on kind of woo stuff out there or on you know, like program slogans. Like I need something very, very practical that's going to work with my life. So on the top of page 49, a couple lines down, it says, we have no reason to doubt it. When, however, the perfectly logical assumption is suggested that underneath, so it's talking about the steel grinder, right? And we have this trust, we have this absolute, like, okay, yeah, we believe that. We don't really understand that, but we believe that. But then it says, when, however, this perfectly logical assumption is suggested that underneath the material world and life, as we see it, there is an all-powerful, guiding, creative intelligence. Right there, a perverse streak comes to the surface, and we laboriously set out to convince ourselves that it isn't so. What is that perverse streak in me? Today, with time, what is that perverse streak? That it won't work for me? That I'm good? I don't need any more God? What is that perverse streak that comes out? That you just don't know, you don't get me. Maybe that works for you, but, you know, what is that perverse streak? And then in the next paragraph, instead of regarding ourselves as intelligent agents, spearheads of God's ever-advancing creation, we agnostics and atheists choose to believe that our human intelligence was the last word, the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. So, again, it's going to go into this whole conversation about how I'm worshiping my great mind. And we've talked a lot about that. We've talked a lot about my self-reliance and will self-knowledge fix me. But can I see that that's actually how I've been living my life? That what I can think of or what I can talk about in my therapy session or what I know to believe to be true, that's actually where the conversations end. ending, instead of being the spearhead, this pointer, like we talked about earlier, this pointer of God's ever-advancing creation, that I get to be a guide and pointing people in the direction of this relationship with God. And then it goes into this long conversation about organized religion. You've already heard my bit on organized religion. And today, I actually do get to see where religious people are right. You know, that's something that it talks about on page 87. Be quick to see where religious people are right, making use of what they offer. And today I get to do that because my heart is open. My heart is open, my mind is open, and I'm able to let all of that in and consider it and then see what works for me. And it's such a beautiful process today. It's so freeing. And so am I in the place of looking at the human defects on some page, top of page 50, looking at the human defects of people and using their shortcomings as a basis of wholesale condemnation, and talking of intolerance, well, I was intolerant myself. I mean, that was me to a T. I was so critical and judgmental of others because I felt they're being critical and judgmental of me. And so I get to ask myself, where am I doing this in my program? Where am I doing this in my life? Where do I have a basis of a wholesale condemnation? Maybe it's not against a religion. Maybe it's against all men or all women or, you know, a certain faction or, you know, what is it? Where am I still judging? Where am I intolerant today? Where am I self-righteous today? A little bit further down on page 50, it says, on one proposition, however, these men and women are strikingly agreed. Every one of them has gained access to and believes in a power greater than themselves. Access. Access. This isn't just about belief. This is about access. This power has, in each case, accomplished to do the miraculous, the humanly impossible. Is that happening in my life? I've done the work. How am I living? Here are thousands of men and women, worldly indeed, flatly declare that since they have come to believe in a power greater than themselves, to take a certain attitude towards that power, we're going to look at that attitude on page 55, that's that willingness to believe, and do certain simple things, there has been a revolutionary change in their way of living and thinking. In the face of collapse and despair, in the face of the total failure of their human resources, they found a new power, peace, happiness, and sense of direction flowed into them. That is so beautiful. Wow. This happened as soon as they wholeheartedly met a few simple requirements. So a great meditation is, what does wholeheartedly mean? What does that mean to you? Dan Sherman talks about wholeheartedly as being not just committed, but being like committed, really, really committed. And what does that mean? And how much am I devoting to my program? How much am I devoting to my connection with God? How much am I devoting to working with others? How much am I devoting to being in my circle and triangle, to being in daily prayer and meditation, to watching, to asking, to turning, to growing in understanding and effectiveness? And how much am I giving even to this workshop? Am I meeting with my step partner, and am I doing my transcribing, and am I sitting and giving myself time to answer my Idiot's Guide questions, Are we reading the chapter together and I'm actually having an experience with this work? Am I allowing my heart to be opened by this work? Am I listening to all of the calls or participating in the calls? So once confused and baffled by the seeming futility of existence, they showed the underlying reason why they were making heavy going of life. Leaving aside the food question, they tell why living was so unsatisfactory. They show how the change came over them. When many hundreds of people are able to say that the consciousness of the presence of God is today the most important fact of their lives, they present a powerful reason why one should have faith. This is, I mean, I love some of the writing in here. It's just so powerful and beautiful. The consciousness of the presence of God. So what does consciousness mean? That's a great meditation as well, is what's the difference between belief and faith and consciousness? I looked up the word consciousness. It's the state of being awake. So many hundreds of people are able to say that they have awakened to the presence of God. And today, not that one time that they did the steps a couple years ago or 10 years ago or even yesterday or last week when I, you know, shared that meeting and blah, blah, blah. But today, it's the most important fact of my life. They present a powerful reason. So is that how I'm living? Am I living today like the presence of God is the most important fact of my life? And is my life revolving around that? Is my life, you know, especially if I'm a newcomer, am I revolving my life around my program and around cultivating this relationship with God? And with time in the program, is my life integrated with my program as it revolves around this relationship with God? They're really great considerations. You know, we get this progression in this work from willingness, to belief, to faith, to reliance, to consciousness. And a lot of us probably come into this conversation feeling like we're believers. You know, I have God. And that's the very thing that it's asking me to lay aside is this, even the idea that, oh, I already have God. But a really compelling consideration is, okay, well, yeah, what about, like, you know, the priests and the, you know, the people of the cloth who are also in AA or they're in program, like they are also, you know, they were big believers, but is it possible that it takes more than just belief? And is it possible that I might be believing and maybe that's what other people can do outside of program? Maybe people can just do the religion thing. But for me personally, I need to be actually relying upon this power. I need access to this power. And I'm blocked and I don't have access right now. And so I need to move from a willingness to a belief to an access point, to a reliance point. And that's what this work is going to allow me to do. And then I get to a place of consciousness, of being awake to the presence of God in my life as I'm relying on God in my life. And I'm turning to God every single day and in every single moment. So the last thing that I want to share is just on the Wright brothers. Because this is just an example of that. I mean, what they're saying here is that the Wright brothers had this faith. They had an intuitive knowing that it was going to work, that they were going to be able to fly. And other people poo-pooed it, and they just knew. They just knew intuitively that this was that this was right and this was going to work. And that's where I get to be in my program today. And for me personally, this is now me speaking about my experience, like, because tomorrow I'm going to be completing the 12 steps with the other group that I was taking through, and I'm also personally in my 12th step, and so I've just completed this work, and something has shifted in me over the last couple of weeks as a result of being active in my 9th step and doing a daily 10 and 11. Like, everything that I'm reading here, I think that's why it's landing so deeply for me, is that I am experiencing a new power, peace, happiness, and sense of direction flowing in me. And I'm experiencing the consciousness of the presence of my Creator in my life. And the problem has been removed. I feel safe and protected, and that is where I'm living today. And I'm so grateful to be doing this program with you and to be in this process and to today be able to show up and to be a spearhead. And that doesn't mean that I have your answers, and that certainly doesn't mean that I'm perfect. And yet I get to be of real use and real service today. And I get to access a power that solves my problem on a moment-to-moment basis. And I never have to feel alone. And my deepest desire is that each one of you experience that to deeper and deeper levels every single year, every single time you do the steps. And, I mean, that's why we're doing this deal, right? So I want to shift now into, we have a ton of questions to go through, and I really wanted to leave plenty of time for us to get into a nice, juicy conversation. So I'm going to shift now, and before I go into the questions, I want to just clarify, because I think some people sometimes don't understand why they talk about the 12 promises of food. So this is from your Idiot's Guide. I just want to explain it for a second. So I'm on page 16, by the way, of the Food Addict's Idiot's Guide. So we have this list of the top 10 craziest, most insane things that we ever did, right? And then underneath that, we have the 12 promises of food. And so what it's saying is that this was my solution, and I was getting results from it, kind of like what we were talking about before, like with the car mechanic and with, you know, my growing reliance upon compulsive eating and restricting and body obsessing, was that I started to do it, and it started to work for me, and I started to rely upon it, and so I was getting results. And I actually, some of the promises were coming true for me. And so when I was compulsively eating, binging, purging, restricting, or over-exercising, I did know a new freedom and a new happiness. That is true for me. And I didn't regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. I was kind of numb from all of that stuff. And I did comprehend the word serenity and no peace, because I could numb myself out, I could distract myself. You know, so it goes on and on. And so I can actually look at how that was a solution for me. And that was something that I got results from. And then it turned on me. And so all this book is simply suggesting is, if I already learned the process of taking some action and starting to have faith that something might work, and starting to rely on that power and put more and more faith in it, I'm going to get results. So if I've already done that process with my drug of no choice, then why wouldn't I be willing to just try that here? So I love that. I think that that's just a genius thing to suggest. Okay, So there's lots of questions to choose from. Of course, you can decide that you want to answer one of the other questions. I'm going to throw a question out there, and whoever wants to unmute themselves and speak about it, you absolutely can. So is a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life sufficient to overcome your compulsive eating, binging, purging, restricting, or over-exercising? And if it was, why didn't you stop acting out around food a long time ago?
Hi, this is Adela, Al-Anon and Overeater. And
hi, Adela.
Hi. So this really jumped out at me, is that I didn't realize until I had done this work, you know, as an Al-Anon or, you know, as an adrenaline junkie, adrenaline addict, that I was even having issues with food. I mean, I knew I had issues with body image and with, like, health, and that was part of my chaos feeding. But it was actually through doing the work that I came to understand that there was something else there, and that's what brought me here. And so, you know, I really was still kind of relying on myself. Like, it's this fundamental belief that this is a small problem, and that small problems, you know, I put so much on God's plate. If this is a small problem, that I don't need to do it. I don't need to add this to God's plate. So, if that makes any kind of sense, that's how I got to where I'm at now, you know, and you know, still struggling with food because I didn't really address it the first couple of times. Like, it would pop up and I would see, well, you know, here's another time that, you know, like, health has come up in a resentment, or here's another time where, you know, I feel like we bristle with antagonism, just like the big book says, like, during the holidays and people are eating, and I bristle with antagonism, and because I can't eat like a normal person. And I had tried all these other things. Like, I had tried, you know, and I didn't even realize it until I was answering these questions and doing the questions from before when I was listening to your, listening to the, you know, the beginning of this workshop. That I had tried, like, living by, because I was raised Catholic, and so, you know, living by Catholic moral standards, so living by the Bible code, and then, you know, ditching religion and trying to become a vegetarian and trying to just only eat vegetables, and then, you know, and then ditching vegetarianism, and then, you know, trying to live just by doing an Atkins diet, and then, you know, trying to ditch that and then trying to do, you know, over-exercising, which was like doing Capoeira. And so living by the codes that were the moral codes of all of those different things. And I realized that none of them had saved me. And the only thing that had actually brought me to this awareness was I had done the step work as an ex-alcoholic and came to understand that I was starting to recoil from foods that I knew were going to hurt me. Part of my problem, my own disease, is that I actually have legitimate health problems that are around food. And where I know I should not get involved with those foods, I still do it. Or I won't take my medicine. Or I will over-exercise and not eat enough and then exasperate those health problems. So it was only through doing this step work that I started to come to an understanding that I don't have this power on my own. Like, I don't have the power to get myself free of worrying compulsively about what I put into my body or what I do to my body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that share. So when
Fred,
God is go ahead.
I'm sorry. I didn't know you were still talking. I'm sorry.
No. I was going to ask the next question, but do you want to speak about that question?
I actually really wanted to share on a different question. May I do that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. So I guess, and I think, Deb, you're going to be aware of what I'm talking about. So I guess what I loved is at the top of 50, when it talks about using their shortcomings as a basis of wholesale condemnation. And so I came to this work. I've been in the rooms for 8 years, and I've been into a lot of different programs, and food is kind of like the final frontier for me. And what I saw is, like, in starting this process, like, I came on, and I was really desperate because I was coming out of a relapse after 8 years and of abstinence, and yet, like, the minute I heard things I wasn't uncomfortable with, I was totally intolerant, and I was like, you know what, I'm done. And then, but what I see and what I saw is that I do that with everything. Like, I see one thing I don't like, and I'm like, go screw. Like, I'm taking my Barbies and going home. Like, I don't want to play, and I do that at work. Like, if I see my colleague talking to another colleague, then I don't like my first colleague because she's talking to that other colleague, you know. And then when I'm doing my 11 at night, I'm finding I'm doing turnarounds, like I'm judging people for being judgmental, and I'm gossiping because people are gossiping, you know, like, and I'm I'm doing that exact behavior that I'm criticizing for. And it's like, what I love about this process and the set-aside prayer is that it enables me to see, like, I'm totally blocked, and I pray to be open, and myself, my thinking continuously, like, blocks me off. And, like, thank you, God, for people who've walked before me who are willing to point out that I'm wrong, like, and I'm so grateful because the messages of depth and weight that I continue to hear when I stop bristling and shut my mouth and open my heart are revolutionizing my life right now. Like, I can't even believe, like, how my life is changing and the way, or, you know, not even the changes, but the changes in thinking that are happening for me are revolutionary. And yet, like, I want to stand on the sidelines and judge everyone for doing exactly what I'm criticizing them for. So it's just amazing, and I'm so grateful for this book that, like, outsmarts me, because, like, I'm Katie the Great I Am, and nobody's going to outsmart me. Like, don't you know I'm educated? Don't you know I know everything? And this chapter does it to me each and every time. So I just was really excited to share that. And with that, I
thought. Thank you so much, Katie. Thank you for that share. So when God is mentioned, have we reopened a subject which you thought you had neatly evaded or entirely ignored? Does the word God bring up a particular idea which someone tried to impress upon you during childhood? And did you reject that idea and think that you had abandoned the God idea entirely? Did you think that faith and dependence upon a power greater than yourself was somewhat weak and even cowardly? Who wants to speak on that? Do we have someone on the line?
Hi, it's Lynn. I'll speak on that for a minute. thanks, Deb, for your lead into this. It was really beautiful and gave me a lot more to consider, as always. You know, for me, you know, when I grew up Jewish, but I was never introduced to temple or anything like that. So I really had no conception of God, but it's still, I bristled with antagonism. And I think unconsciously, I did feel that it would make me weak. And I don't know if that's just an old idea from my dad or what it was. But, you know, I didn't start the BBA work in my first program getting sober until 8 months sober. And I was going to meetings where there was a lot of God being discussed. And I couldn't take it. I thought I missed something. I had no idea until I started BBA work that the steps were designed to help me gain access and build a relationship with God. And I was so relieved when Kimberly started working with me at 8 months because, you know, I really thought I had to come in with a God. And because I didn't, I thought I was screwed. And so I just, you know, that's kind of my experience. And as far as, it's so interesting, you know, how it is so important to set aside what I think I know, because I did gain access to a power that has kept me sober almost 7 years, but that didn't help me one iota with my food issues, not one iota. And so, you know, I continue to set aside and come up with a new conception because I absolutely need to rely on God so much with my food choices. And, you know, I need more power, a lot more with my food than I did with the drugs. And the benefit of that is practicing the presence of God in all of my affairs and really in a lot of my thoughts gives me peace and ease and comfort that I never had before. So it doesn't have to be just on the big things, you know, to literally practice the presence of God and say, hi, God, how are you? And, you know, I actually keep a rubber band on my wrist a lot of times, and that's kind of my reminder to practice the presence of God. Nobody knows what it is. They think I left it on my wrist for work, or they think, you know, every time I want to eat something, I pull it and it's some tool. And all it is to remind me to connect to God. And nobody knows it but me and a few of my close friends. And it works. And then when I forget to, I take it off sometimes, I don't wear it for a while, and then I put it back on and I practice more. And so anyway, that's it. Thanks.
Oh, I love that, Lynn. Thank you for sharing that. I love your little, your God bracelet. I love it. I love that. Yeah, go ahead. Who's it?
This is Adela again, and I wanted to kind of just spur off of what Lynn said, and and I think it's great, and I feel like, yeah, every time I do this work and I do this step, my God gets a little bit bigger and I get a little bit smaller, and I need that in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah. What is your conception? What's your conception of God?
Well, I mean, like I was saying, like, it's coming to the realization, like, that this is such a little thing for God to worry about. Like, I, you know what I mean? Like, I have this conception of, you know, God being this fatherly figure. And so, and then I've come to realize that, you know, parents are not stagnant. You know, they continue to grow as parents as you continue to grow as well. And so, for me, like, coming to realize that, you know, that God is big enough to handle the small problems. Like, yeah, I feel like God has handled so many other of my big problems because I've had some really major ones, like, surviving cancer 3 times and having major surgery 2 times in the last 2 years. I feel like that I shouldn't have to ask God to help me deal with what I feel around food or what I feel around my health or what I feel around my body image, you know, because it's a small thing compared to those other things. And I'm now coming to the realization that God can take that too. You know, and I'm one of those people that likes to put limits on things. And so what I've been doing is I've been putting a limit on to how much I think that God can handle or what I think is a big enough problem. But I have to realize that those small problems, they can sure add up to become very big problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you for that share. So I'd love to hear somebody's conception of God.
This is Stephanie. I'd like to share.
Hi, Stephanie.
Hi. My conception of God is that God has my back. He has my best interest in mind. He is personal to me. He loves me no matter what. He is powerful. He's mighty. He is accessible. He's mysterious, and he's trustworthy.
Beautiful. Love it. Anybody else want to share about their conception of God?
Hi, it's Suzanne.
Hi, Suzanne.
Hi. So I'm going to not talk as much about my conception of God as I want to. Well, I'll start by saying that I have a very nebulous conception of God. In all honesty, I don't pay a whole lot. I haven't spent a whole lot of time in thinking it out, primarily because I have always believed in something, and what I do believe in is that this something is positive beyond my wildest dreams. And what really helped me, though, was actually going, when I was in step 4, doing an entire 4-step on religion, on God, on just all the things that were confusing to me, that didn't make sense, and this and that. And that really opened up a whole new way for me to be more open to concepts. And that's what has really, really worked for me, was just to actually, like, clean out all that stuff in the past that I was so, so caught up in. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. And I agree with you. That is where we're able to actually get in there and clear out all of that gunk. And so it's like at this point we're talking about it, but we almost don't have the power, just like we don't have the power to do any of those other things. We don't have the power to actually efficiently lay aside the prejudice because we don't have control over our emotional nature. So I agree with you. That's a really good point. Is that we do gain access by gaining the ability to take all this stuff into our inventory and take it to God. Awesome. So do you now believe, or are you even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than yourself, and why?
Hi, Deb. This is Laura in Tennessee, Clutterer, Al-Anon.
Hi.
Hi, thank you so much. And I just, what is coming to mind right now, and it's kind of more for the question you asked a minute ago, which is basically why I'm so drawn to do this work, is that I don't have that conception. And at times I think my old ideas, even though I set them aside, I pick them back up even without knowing. And I think a lot of times it's when I am disconnected that I don't even realize that I'm disconnected. And so recently I heard someone phrasing it this way, that my will is a desperate urgency and God's will is a calm certainty. And the thing that comes to mind for me too is that I have had experiences where my will was the urgency and I was, you know, wanting things a certain way, and then setting that aside and praying for God's will, you know, maybe not entirely, but at least momentarily. And when I've experienced the grace of God coming in, and when I've experienced the later more to be revealed, it's that little bit of experience that keeps adding up that gives me, I think, more faith and willingness to be able to try to establish on a more regular basis, not just the things that, oh, well, okay, I'm not turning all of it over, just this, because this is a mess, so you fix this, you know, and into the whole idea of seeking conscious contact on a regular basis. And because I so many times have seen, like you said earlier, where things are going good, and then, okay, I've got this. And that whole trick of, thank you, God, for restoring me to sanity, and now I can handle it, you know, until things get to that point again. But it makes me think of, you know, my neighbor had her husband put out these sticky traps or whatever, and she had little wrens, little birds that got caught in them. And thinking of, you know, in a way, when we were trying to rescue them, and how they were in a desperate urgency flailing around, and how not knowing and having that trust, I just picture myself like a little bird flapping stuck to the trap. And if I just let go, then God has a greater plan. And as I'm seeing in small glimpses and starting to experience that in small ways where I think I know, I have to keep setting aside and reminding myself for the next thing, that don't go into that fear pattern. Remember the experience and keep building on it. So thank you, and I'm going to mute and pass.
Thank you so much. And I just love that we can come together, especially as we move into step two and beyond, that we can come together from whatever the primary, addiction is, we all can come together on the same thing and have a common experience and a common solution. So thank you so much for your share, Laura. So did you believe you already knew everything you needed to know about living life? Let's get some honesty. Get an honest share here. Not that all the other shares haven't been honest, but this one's just really, really asking for you to call yourself out. And as I'm considering this question for myself, I'm considering also, do I believe I already know everything I need to know about God?
Deb, this is Katie, may I share?
Absolutely.
So I guess what really came to me in this question was
like what happened for me within program, which was like, so I did the steps, right, and I went back to grad school, which was like unbelievable, and I was like, I got this, God. So like in contrast to what a previous speaker was saying when she was sharing about like, you know, the food not, you know, being a smaller problem and maybe not bringing it to God, or in how she phrased that was how I understood it. But like for me, I was like, oh, okay, God, and I can still be this way. Like, okay, God, I got this now. Like, I got this. Like, you're there, but I'm going to manage it, and I think I know everything. Like, I went through the steps. I had made a bunch of amends. I was flying high, and it's like, okay, so I'm kind of done, you know, like me and God, like, yeah, I'll go to a meeting once in a while, round my life out with a little bit of OA and AA and whatever. And I, the fear is like, if I don't know everything, or if I let God, right, like somehow I'm going to give God permission to manage, that I'm not going to get what I want, you know, and that's the fear that drives my, you know, agnosticism. And I feel like when I'm in that place, I miss out on that beautiful line from page 100, which promises me, like, the things I place in God's hands are better than I can imagine. But, like, how do I get to that place of faith that God knows better, that there is a benevolent God that has room for me, too, that this is for me, too. So I can still be that, like, I know, like, I know everything. It's all right. But I know that what I do know is that when I'm in that place, I really miss out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you so much. And I feel like that fear, I'm not going to get what I want, is a big, big one that hits us. I think it hits all addicts, but I feel like those of us with food issues, it hits us big time, because that's the not enough, too much stuff that, for me at least, plays out on my plate when I'm not connected to God, where I'm overfilling because I don't feel like I have enough or I am enough, and then I fear that I'm too much, I'm too overbearing, I've got too much of this going on, or, yeah. And I fear that I eat too much as well, and then I've got to go restrict. So thank you for bringing up that point. So at this point, I want to simply open up the meeting for any questions or comments that relate to this topic. So let's try to keep it around the topic of we agnostics and of God, but any other questions that pertain to this, would love to just open up the call for that.
Hello, my name is Nathan.
Hi.
From.
Hello.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, good. Yeah, yeah. Very grateful for this workshop, and it's been very inspiring. Well, yeah, this whole idea, the concept of God, and I think what I've learned most being in program is that I used to be very cerebral and very, well, try to think of myself as intellectual, but what I missed out on was the actual experience, experiencing God, experiencing life. It felt, for me, what I'm understanding from what we're reading is all about relationship. And, you know, it talks quite a few places, talks about proof and reasoning and, you know, and that's thinking stuff, which is good, but there's something greater than that, which is you know, I think it, when talking about the word of consciousness, which is awareness for me, and also, you know, psychic change, the psyche is that part of me which is aware, which perceives, which sees and feels, and that is greater than just, you know, it's beyond the, it's my knowing that is beyond my thinking apparatus. And yeah, I can definitely relate to being powerless and having belief, and but that's where I fall, you know. And, you know, being in the clergy, I'm just speaking anonymously, but I guess people could figure out which clergy. But I think, you know, it's sort of like a setup that God has, wants us to get to know him, and part of that is being in places where we don't know him. And, you know, I like it says in the index two of spiritual experience, you know, the words that jump out to me there are like, well, the word agnostic is not knowing, and ignorance, and these are things, you know, the opposite of it is knowing, and knowing in the sense beyond the intellect, but in someone more is perceiving through feeling and seeing as it perceiving. And yeah, I think my conception of God is basically that we're all just children, and that helps me a lot, because if I don't, if I take myself too seriously, then but yeah, being a child and and God as parent, father, or mother, it's very powerful. A lot of things I like to say, but I get shy. But that's for me the most important thing. And you know, the thing about faith for me is that it's beyond. It's a knowing that, and it's a truth that's beyond thinking, beyond logic. Yeah, it's a, you know, I can use a tool. It's probably the greatest tool we have, our brain, but I can misuse it. Whereas faith is a knowing and a perceiving that is beyond my brain, beyond my thoughts. And you know, everyone talks about prejudice. That's what prejudice is. It's is judging. You know, I love the again, I'm just turning back to this. It talks about willingness, open honesty, and open mindedness. Open mindedness is non judgment. It's defenselessness, where I don't, you know, where I'm not using my mind and my ego. And I need my ego. God created us as individuals. It's sort of like we've been set up, because, you know, he's given us the ability to use our minds, and it's very easy. He even says that it's a visual proof is the weakest type of proof. But so how can we not fall into this trap? And, you know, it's like waves in an ocean, but each wave is unique, and we're supposed to live in a way that is unique to each individual. Otherwise, we'd all be the same. But it's almost inevitable that we're going to, you know, so it's just that we're going to think somewhere that we have to have it all worked out. And but yeah, so I'm just grateful. Yeah, now I forget what I was going to say, but that's and so I'm struggling. But oh yeah, the thing is that God is in my problems just as much as he's in the solution. So it talks about alcohol is a great, or food or whatever was a great persuader. Well, you know, I try to look and I don't succeed oftentimes, but God is in my problems, because he wants me to know him better. And so agnosticism, you know, those parts of me, I have plenty of agnostic, you know, even though I want to admit it intellectually, but wherever I have a problem, so to speak, it's because I may let God in intellectually, but I'm not experiencing God on a, you know, in a relationship sense. And that's where those pockets of agnosticism are where I have my problems. But it's a good thing, because it's supposed to be like that, so that can I find God in the problem itself, in the food or in the whatever it is. Yeah, I think I'll leave it at that. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you so much for that share. And yeah, it reminds me of what agnostic means, because ag means not and or no, and gnostic like is to know. Like it's that deep knowing. It's not knowing in my brain, but gnosis is that deep experiential knowing.
Yeah, relationship experiential knowing. That's what it's all about for me.
Yeah, beautiful.
And I think
thank
also
so
where I don't have power, you know, like step one in all my affairs is just seeing, and where did God give me power today, where I didn't have power and where I was deceived. But also where I don't have power and do have power is very much in line with what my purpose is in life and direction. And, you know, for me, power with a capital P, knowledge is just as much a part of it as is the actual power. It's sort of like the same thing, because if I have a power, you know, I think there's an advertisement, power without control is nothing. But I think it's for the tires, but it's very true. If it's true power, then there's direction there, and there's choice. And otherwise, it's sort of like a pseudo power or a counterfeit power, deluding ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you so much for your share.
Thanks.
So who else wants to, who else has a comment or a question that relates to this topic?
Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi. You know, for me, I just want to get back to the beginning of the chapter and the work, and I'm just going over my Idiot's Guide questions. And, you know, for me, I just really have to see I'm just the wrong power for my life. I don't have to know God, which it tells us in the book. At this point, I don't even have to have a real relationship. I just have to see that my power doesn't work. And if I can truly see that by having a first step experience, which I'm so having, and I do want to say thank you to the group. I took a 30-day chip today of abstinence, and
Sandy
has returned. And this was the hardest 30 days I've ever had. The newfound respect I have for this disease is just, I couldn't even speak this morning. I just really have to see that on my own, I can't do anything. So I see my lack of power and I have faced the fact that I must find a spiritual basis of life or else. And today I want to live because I've tasted the solution and it's there. It's real. Nobody can take that away from me. Nobody that says they don't believe in God, it's okay for them, but I've experienced it. And so at this point in the work, for me, I am so willing to believe and so willing to stay open-minded and so willing to accept that I'm the wrong power for my life and so excited to keep moving forward. So thanks.
Yay. Oh, it's so beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that. And we celebrate you and your abstinence. Thank you for that. Any final comments, questions, or burning desires before we wrap up the call for today?
Hey, Debbie, it's Adele again. No, I just really want to say thank you for talking at the very beginning about the top of page 48 and going through, and I'm thinking about that more and about, like, am I handicapped? Am I handicapped by stubbornness, sensitivity, you know, being sensitiveness, and unreasoning prejudice? And do I believe for myself that this sort of thinking has to be abandoned? And yeah, it's like every time I limit myself, every time I limit what is possible by God, that I'm limiting how free I can get. And that those limiting beliefs come from prejudice. And I want to just thank you for sharing your portion of that about being stubborn. And, yeah. That's it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I was really meditating on that because I didn't want to be judged. I know that there are a lot of religious people who listen to this call, and I was like, it was interesting because you all know, like, I share everything, but I was feeling really like I don't want to alienate people. I don't know. I had a whole lot of stories going on, so. In sharing my truth, it was really liberating. But I just said, this is what is coming up for me to do. And so something that I've started to say, this actually came up while I was listening to a fifth step a couple like 2 weeks ago or something like that, was I was making some point, because when we're in, you know, when each one of you is going to have an opportunity to have this experience, and it's absolutely incredible, and an experience you must not miss of both being in a fifth step and reading your fifth step and listening to a fifth step. So when you're listening, oftentimes you'll get an intuitive hit of something to share that's certainly not coming from you, but it's definitely coming from a higher power. And so this thing came out of my mouth, and I've been using it as like a personal mantra, and it says, the extent to which my ego says no is the extent to which my spirit will grow. The extent to which my ego says no is the extent to which my spirit will grow. And so every time I hit up against something that my ego is like, no, this is going to make you look bad, or you might get judged, or you might do blah, 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 and fill in all the blanks. You might embarrass yourself. Someone might think less of you. Whatever that thing is, I say, ah, this is a great opportunity for me to grow my spirit, as my ego kind of takes like a backseat a little bit. And what would it look like to do that thing that is everything that my ego wouldn't want me to do? And what's on the other side of that? And that's actually what I get to do when I'm in my amends process, is I get to consider that this isn't something I want to do, and yet who do I get to be on the other side of this amends? And clearly we don't have the power for that as we are in step two right now, but we will be gaining access to that power. We're moving from this willingness to this belief to a reliance. I start to rely on God as I take my awakened spirit out into the world and start to make amends, and then I get to grow in understanding and effectiveness and build my conscious contact. So thank you, everybody, who shared today. I want to remind you of what your homework assignment is. Assignment 11. So we are on the second half of We Agnostics. This is also, I mean, this chapter is great. Every single chapter is great. I know you're probably sick of hearing me say that, but this goes into some really awesome places, and it's going to really ask me another critical question that I refer back to all time as I'm going through the rest of the steps. It's actually one of the things that I bring into a pretty regular consideration practice as I move throughout my day in my 10th step. So I want to make sure that you've all that you're all able to make it to next week's call. We can all talk about the second half of We Agnostics. So signing out for right now, thank you to everyone, and have a wonderful rest of your day or your evening. Bye-bye. Oh, my goodness, what am I saying? Let's finish off with the Serenity Prayer. See, I forget stuff all the time. Okay, let's finish together. So, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. See, this is what happens when I'm in a vacuum doing this recording. I forget. All right, I will see you next week. Bye-bye.